Motorcycling is the ultimate form of freedom. Soar through the mountains on these fresh laid asphalt roads with gently banked turns that snake down through the jungle.
Glenn Hegstad is on the adventure of a lifetime.
It's one of those dream rides you never want to end.
A year-long motorcycle trip from his home in Palm Springs, California.
Adventure travel is really the essence of my life at this point.
Through Mexico, Central America, and all the way to the tip of South America and back.
I like to ride motorcycles. I like Latin America, and the tip seemed like a nice place to go to.
20,000 miles along the toughest terrain in the world.
John, run!
Through countries torn by guerrilla warfare.
Are you drawn to hot spots? Are you drawn to danger?
Well, as opposed to Disneyland or a golf course, yeah.
Glenn owns a security firm. He's a former Hell's Angel.
Yeah.
Who's seen his share of danger on motorcycle adventures before.
Yeah, I've been hit with baseball bats, 2x4s, tire irons, machetes. It's a package deal, you know, when you take that path.
But this time, he got more than he bargained for.
So you're an adventurer, a risk taker, and an outlaw. And a former hostage.
And a former hostage, that's right.
With his 50th birthday approaching, Glenn began carefully planning his trip through Latin America.
He loves adventure. He lives for it, he thrives on it. But he's a very smart, savvy guy, too.
Good friend and fellow motorcycle enthusiast, Dennis Hoff.
He spent 6 months researching it, getting everything together, getting the proper motorcycle.
It's electric vest.
Proper computer systems, waterproof computers. I gave him GPS systems.
Satellite navigation.
So he could know where he's at all times. And he spent a lot of time and research knowing where he was going and how he was going to get there.
No detail was overlooked. Glenn even created a website under his nickname, The Striking Viking.
www.strikingviking.net.
Where he could post a daily journal of his travels.
We kept in contact, and I kept track of Glenn by his emails, daily emails.
If Glenn couldn't find access to the internet, his friends had other ways of tracking his progress.
The plan was to use a credit card every day, a certain credit card, and if he didn't use the card, we would know there was a problem.
You study, you prepare for it, and you go.
Glenn left Palm Springs on October 1st, and a month later, after traveling 5,000 miles through Mexico and Central America, he rode into Bogota, Colombia, and into the crossfire of a brutal 30-year civil war. A conflict financed by drug trafficking and hostage taking.
You knew that you were a potential target for the kidnappers. You knew that.
Absolutely.
And you've accepted that risk.
Absolutely.
Why didn't you bring a weapon with you?
I am a weapon.
I'm a 4th-degree black belt in judo, 3rd-degree black belt in karate, a 1st-degree black belt in Shaolin kung fu, and a 1st-degree black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Brazilian.
What warnings were issued to you in Colombia before you left Bogota?
From talking to people, cops, soldiers, citizens, 50-50 on whether or not it was safe to ride.
From Bogota, Glenn decided to travel northwest to the city of Medellin. But 6 hours into the trip while driving along this highway, he was stopped at a military-style roadblock by a group of guerrillas armed with AK-47 rifles.
They popped out of the jungle and popped out from behind the bus, the guerrillas.
What did they tell you to do?
Get off the motorcycle, and then they started jabbing me with their guns and just screaming. They didn't realize I was an American, and of course, they hit the lottery. They couldn't believe it.
So they marched you into the jungle?
Yeah, that was it. About 10, 15 minutes into the hike, I asked them, who are you? ¿Quién es ustedes? And they said, ELN.
The ELN, the National Liberation Army, is one of Colombia's guerrilla groups which funds its revolution through extortion and ransom from mass kidnappings. Last year, the rebels took 350 hostages. One of them was an American.
I got raked over the coals by these guys. They would tie me up and spit in my face, give me their little treatments and spit in my face again. This was because I was an American.
His time in captivity would only get darker.
For the first 3 or 4 weeks, I'm struggling to survive.
Days with little or no food.
I'm so skinny now, my bones protrude through my clothing. I wonder if anybody even knows I'm alive.
And torture.
Did they abuse you physically?
Yeah.
That's next. When Glenn Hegstad went searching for adventure in Latin America,
this was going to be the challenge of a lifetime.
Being taken hostage by left-wing guerrillas in the jungles of Colombia wasn't exactly what he had in mind.
Every single day I was in captivity, I assumed that was the day I was going to be killed.
But his disappearance didn't go unnoticed. Back home in Carson City, Nevada, friends like Dennis Hoff were worried.
And I kept track of Glenn by daily emails, strikingviking.net.
Up until now, Glenn had been religiously posting messages on his website, but the emails had stopped.
So you're tracking his footsteps, and all of a sudden it just stops dead. The trail stops. Your guts start grinding like this. And you know what? They don't quit grinding.
Hoff immediately contacted friends in Colombia who began searching for Glenn.
We had people check all the hospitals from Bogota to Medellin, all the wrecking yards, thinking that maybe he got his motorcycle impounded and was arrested, and nothing like that had happened. So at that point, we realized that he'd probably been kidnapped.
The American embassy in Bogota confirmed that Glenn had been taken hostage, but Hoff claims they were slow in trying to win his release and refused to negotiate with the rebels.
The reality is we were ready to deal with the devil. We didn't care what the U.S. embassy said or did. We want him out.
Frustrated, Glenn's friends flew to Colombia and attempted to mount a rescue mission of their own.
We had the Army Ranger people, ex-Army Ranger people, prepared to try to find him and to rescue him.
But Colombian authorities learned about the unauthorized rescue plan and had Glenn's friends deported from the country. By now, 3 weeks had passed, and Glenn was losing hope that he'd ever emerge from the jungle alive.
Even when I'd finally rest and I'd lay down at night and bugs crawling all over me, I'd still be mumbling all night, I will survive, I will survive, I will survive, I will survive. This gringo's not going down easy.
Glenn says his 23 years of martial arts experience helped him survive, but he was no match for guerrillas with guns.
But to take on a bunch of guys with machine guns when you don't have one, no, I don't think so.
10 hours a day, Glenn was forced to march.
We'd be climbing straight up, we hit the ridge, and then down the other side.
With nothing more to sustain him than a bowl of rice and sugared water.
And every day it was Masariba, higher into the mountains.
In your mind, what was your only shot for survival?
My only shot for survival was to convince them that I was there to write about them.
The rebels gave him a pad and pen. He kept a diary during his 33 days in captivity.
Thanksgiving Day, 2001.
My first line is, I'm thankful that I'm still alive. Commandante has been rallying the troops every morning now. Gives a short speech on discipline. They all sing the guerrilla fight song. I'm so skinny now, my bones protrude through my clothing. Sleeping on the hard floor at night with my bones directly on the cement floor is painful. I'm always hungry. I've stopped picking the insects out of my food. It's my only source of protein. I wonder if anybody even knows I'm alive.
Did they abuse you physically?
Yeah.
Because you weren't compliant or just because they wanted to? Is it too difficult to talk about?
I need a break, huh? I take a break?
Sure.
I can't talk about that, okay? Don't even bring that up to me.
In his 33 days as a hostage, Glenn endured beatings, mock executions, and degrading abuse.
Okay.
I got it all under control except that.
Sorry.
It just triggered something, you know, I can't.
Finally, on December 8th, Glenn's ordeal ended as suddenly as it began.
They never wanted anything. They never asked for a dime.
The rebels alerted the Red Cross that a hostage would be released into their custody, possibly as part of a Christmas truce.
When I came through the clearing and I looked down and I saw the Red Cross wagon there, I was shaking. It was quite an emotional moment.
Glenn lost 50 pounds in captivity. And while dehydrated and malnourished, he refused to be hospitalized.
The Red Cross later turned Glenn over into the custody of waiting FBI agents who brought him back here to the Bogota airport. Arrangements were made for a new passport and a ticket on the first plane back to the United States. But to everyone's surprise, Glenn had other plans.
I believe it would destroy me as a man to give up and go home.
Remarkably, Glenn resolved to continue his trip.
He's just going to do it. He was not coming home. Case closed, full stop, I'm going. That's it.
A month later,
nothing stops the striking Viking.
A new bike arrived in Quito, Ecuador.
Is that a beautiful sight?
And a new laptop computer and digital camera.
Spare GPS.
All gifts from his friends back home.
As soon as they got word that I was alive, and as soon as they got word that I was being released, they were hustling another bike, they were ordering parts.
Sounds like great friends, man.
Yeah. That's an understatement.
When we last spoke to Glenn, he was traveling somewhere in Brazil.
Well, I keep telling myself the worst is over.
He may not make it home until the fall, but he's already planning for his next adventure to Siberia.
That's my policy in life. Whenever I experience any type of setback, I'm determined to come out ahead.
He's my hero.
Thank you, Brian.
Just before midnight, a young mother is returned home to Corpus Christi, Texas, in the custody of federal marshals.
I had no idea I would now end up a criminal.
An international fugitive.
Chased by the FBI, Interpol, Europol, indicted by a grand jury for kidnapping my own child.
Her name is Cindy Graber-Linden.
You used aliases, right?
I used Johansson. My first name, I called myself Sophie.
She's been the focus of a manhunt for 4 years after taking her son Gabriel out of the United States.
It became a kind of a passion for her to hide, to beat the system, to live on the run.
Captain Gabe.
She would not share custody of the little boy with her ex-husband.
Any regrets?
I regret that I wasn't a lot more careful who I had a child with.
This is the month before he was abducted. But
Paul Marinkovich is Gabriel's father.
It's been like loving a ghost.
Doing a good job there, Cap.
I haven't been able to see, feel, touch, hear from him, talk to him on the phone. He's been like the lost child.
Gabriel Marinkovich, now 10, is at the heart of this custody battle.
Who does Gabriel want to live with?
Who he's always lived with. His mother, his family.
It's a bitter dispute.
He's a lunatic. My ex-husband is a delusional, obsessive, abusive lunatic.
She's not dealing with a balanced playing field. She's not a balanced person.
A dispute that's involved the governments of four nations, and together cost both parents hundreds of thousands of dollars.
When you have to protect your child, you have to do whatever it takes.
12 years ago, things were very different.
We were married on the bluffs in Santa Monica, and it was kind of a medieval type theme.
Paul arrived at his wedding dressed in medieval costume, riding a white horse.
It was interesting, it was different.
I whispered to my bridesmaid and my mom, I don't think I can do this, what is he doing?
Where's your baby, Delancey?
Paul worked in real estate. Cindy was a stay-at-home mom. With Paul's son Michael and Cindy's daughter Delancey, both from previous marriages, the couple had an instant family. And in a year, Gabriel was born.
And here's the real Christmas baby.
But not long after the birth, Cindy says, things began to change dramatically. Cindy claims Paul's son Michael had molested her 2-year-old daughter.
At the time, I just thought, my God, I gotta get the hell out of here.
Even worse, she would later claim, Paul himself had molested the little girl.
Did a medical examination of Delancey confirm your fears that she had been violated?
I took her to a special sexual abuse evaluator that saw tearing and some scarring. And unfortunately, those records seem to have disappeared.
Did you do anything inappropriate?
Absolutely
anything
not.
That could be misconstrued?
Absolutely not. I loved that child. I loved Delancey like she was my own daughter.
Did Michael do anything inappropriate?
Absolutely
with
not. Michael was a functional 5-year-old child.
Is it possible that you're mistaken?
Is it possible that my daughter is lying? No.
Both children, Delancey and Michael, were sent to see different child therapists.
Michael was left feeling like he was responsible for this.
One therapist who treated Michael concluded there was a high likelihood that some serious sexual improprieties had occurred. Child Protective Services was notified and investigated, but they found the allegation baseless, and no charges were pursued.
What kind of person would do that? Obviously someone who isn't capable of parenting a child.
3 years after their fairy tale marriage, Paul and Cindy separated. Paul denying then and steadfastly denying today that either he or his son ever molested Delancey. Cindy and the children moved to Texas to Corpus Christi, but that wasn't the end of anything, not by a long shot. In fact, it was barely the beginning.
My only concern, always, always, has been the protection of Gabriel.
Go! Go! Yeah.
After the divorce, though he maintained his innocence, Paul did agree to visit Gabriel only under supervised conditions.
Mighty Casey at that.
Biggest mistake I ever made was signing that agreement. I regret it.
Cindy, meanwhile, fell in love with a Swedish man named Michael Linden, who became a surrogate father to Gabriel and Delancey. Worried that he would lose contact with Gabriel, Paul filed for increased visitation.
Her whole life has been about moving from one place to another place to another place. She just can't stay still. And so I knew that she was planning on moving.
Turn around.
Cindy was resisting, still believing Paul had molested her daughter. So she asked the Texas judge overseeing Paul's visitation request to order a new investigation.
I'm going to open my book. I'm going to let people see what I'm being accused of. And then I'm going to defend myself and show them why it's not true.
A court-appointed psychologist found that Paul did not abuse any of his children. Moreover, the psychologist said it was Cindy who used manipulation to convince the children involved that abuse had occurred.
Why would she go to these lengths?
Because it's effective. It works. I hate to say it, but it works. It works really well. It's the number one reason in cases of abduction.
Hey, Gabe.
The judge granted Paul increased visitation rights.
Turn to your left, Captain.
On August 18th, 1996, my son and I shared a boat on the Corpus Christi Harbor, and we had a loving father and son relationship.
Although he didn't know it at the time, that would be his last visit with Gabriel.
The next day, he was whisked out of the country.
Determined to keep Gabriel from his father.
I was at my wit's end, financially, emotionally, everything.
Cindy takes her children. Yay! And runs.
My son's been programmed to hate his father.
Coming up.
Right now I'm in Healdsburg, here in Helsingborg. I went to Stockholm yesterday.
Paul's desperate search for his kidnapped son.
I really need your help here.
That's next. When Paul Marinkovich arrived at Cindy's house in Corpus Christi to see Gabriel again, the house was empty.
It was sheer terror. I knew Gabriel was kidnapped. Gabriel had been so fervent in asking me if I was going to come back that I absolutely knew that it had occurred.
Cindy and the children had moved to Sweden, where they went into hiding with Cindy's new husband, a Swedish national. At the time, Gabriel was 6 years old.
What is it?
Goal! How did she explain to you that you had to leave the United States and move to Sweden?
She said we were going to go on a vacation.
You took this child and you fled the country.
I didn't take the child. I always had the child. The child was in my custody when I left. And I've left the country before with my child, with no problem.
We know that you broke the law, right?
No, I didn't break the law. I was in contempt of court on not giving my address and saying where I had moved to.
Kidnapped. Absolutely kidnapped.
The State Department issued a warrant for Cindy's arrest and broadcast an international crime alert throughout Europe.
If you have any information, contact the nearest U.S. embassy.
But it didn't help.
The FBI was completely ineffective. The State Department was completely ineffective.
So Paul launched a one-man crusade to bring his son home, appearing before a Senate committee.
If we don't treat the abduction of our children as a serious matter, then how can we expect those other countries involved to fight for our children's return?
Convincing Swedish television to broadcast a segment about Gabriel
Marinkovic
on its version of America's Most Wanted.
FBI's list.
Flying to Sweden several times to search for his son.
We've got a full agenda today.
Pleading his case with Swedish officials.
Got to go to the police department and enroll their help. Going to call the Office of Foreign Ministry and see if they can get me a visit.
Documenting every step with a home video camera.
Having a difficult time finding her, but I think I'm on the right track.
But Cindy soon learned of Paul's efforts, and before the Swedish authorities could move in...
December 22nd, 3:30 in the morning, I can't sleep.
She took Gabriel and disappeared again. Winding up in the resort village of Malaga in southern Spain, where she got by barely with odd jobs.
I went and applied for a legitimate job in Spain and used the last name of my favorite author, Sidney Sheldon.
6 months after arriving in Spain, Cindy found a lost passport and assumed the identity. She used it to move one more time to Scotland, where the family settled in a village just outside of Edinburgh.
Did you know that you were in hiding at that time?
Well, kind of. I had to use Johansson as my last name because my dad was looking for me.
What else did you do to make sure that no one knew who you really were?
I had to kind of avoid cops.
You had to avoid the police?
Yes. The police was helping my dad. So my mom didn't want me to go too close to the police.
It's not there, Mom.
Cindy says her every move was because of fear.
Oh, watch out for the guy with the pizza!
Fear that Paul would be awarded custody of the little boy.
Oh, you almost got 50!
Do you really believe that Paul would hurt him?
I can only go by my daughter and what she lives with from what he did to her.
I knew that we were in danger.
Delancey, Cindy's daughter, says she remembers being sexually abused by Paul despite the fact that she was 2.5 at the time.
I can remember I always just felt scared around him. I can remember that I felt that he was sort of a creepy.
A few years back, Delancey drew pictures of memories that she says still haunt her.
I drew these when I was in Spain when I was 6, and I mean, I'd rather just not exactly talk about it.
Are these allegations true, Delancey?
Yeah.
Paul did hurt you.
Yeah. Where can those
kids be? You weren't even 3 years old when these things happened. Do you remember?
I mean, people think that children don't remember. We do. We do remember. Maybe not everyone doesn't like to talk about it, but we do remember.
Delancey told me you did do something inappropriate.
Delancey might believe that to be true, but Mama was telling Delancey that she was abused. It's sickening, Troy. It's sickening what's been done to that little girl.
Did you coach Delancey into making these horrible allegations?
No.
In June of 2000, Cindy's nearly 4 years on the run from the man she believed endangered her children ended sharply and suddenly.
They said, are you Gabriel? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, FBI, you know.
10 detectives from Scotland Yard, acting on information from the FBI, surrounded her small apartment.
You know why 10? Because on their list they had, number one, I was armed and dangerous.
They took her into custody, placing Gabriel in a temporary foster home.
A Scottish judge ruled Cindy had violated international anti-kidnapping laws and ordered her to face an extradition hearing.
Gabriel, the judge said, would have to return to the United States at once.
Gabriel used to call me Poppy.
Hi, Poppy.
Poppy this, Poppy that.
I love Poppy.
I'd give anything to hear that right now.
It's been 4 years since Paul Marinkovich last saw his son, Gabriel. But now, they will finally be reunited.
I hope I can get it back to where we had it once. I'm nervous about it, I really am.
A judge has ordered that Gabriel be returned to the United States following his mother's arrest in Scotland for kidnapping her son. After spending 9 days in prison,
I was put in a maximum security prison.
Cindy posts bail.
I was listed as armed and dangerous.
But her movements are closely monitored as she awaits extradition to the United States.
You managed to elude authorities for nearly 4 years, and they caught up with you. You feel like they won?
All I did was buy my son some more time. Some more time of normality, security, and happiness.
Thank you, Earth, for all our food.
Before flying back to Texas, Gabriel, who's been in foster care in Scotland since his mother's arrest, is allowed to see Cindy one last time.
You gave him some advice.
Yeah, I just told him to hang in there and do whatever he feels he needs to do to remain safe, that I will be there, I will fight for him, I will get him out of any bad situations.
What did your mom say to you when you last saw her in Scotland?
She told me that she loved me and stuff like that.
And to be brave.
Yeah.
I'm interested in Gabriel winning.
In Texas, Paul and his new wife, Margarita, wait anxiously to see Gabriel. But child therapists advise them to proceed slowly.
He's been taught that I'm a bad guy. And for me just to walk up and hug him and take him home, it's not the proper way in which to handle this. We have to reintegrate. We have to build trust.
I haven't known my dad for 4 years. And my mom told a lot of bad things about my dad. So I was kind of nervous and kind of scared too.
What kind of bad things did she say?
My dad was a bad person, and we were running away for a good reason.
And you believed her?
Yes, because, like, I didn't really remember my dad.
After hearing from court-appointed psychologists, a judge grants Paul one supervised visit with Gabriel.
I'm baiting up a hook and going fishing with my son this afternoon. I couldn't ask for anything more.
For Paul, the fishing trip was one he had waited 4 long years to take.
It's a nice big whopper.
My child didn't forget about his dad. He didn't forget about the relationship we had, and he didn't buy into 100% all that was being told to him.
Good morning, folks.
Just days later, Paul scores his first legal victory, winning temporary custody of Gabriel until the case goes to court the next year.
Go get your boy.
This child has missed something for 4 years of his life. He's got it back. We're gonna go pick up our son and take him home.
Still in England, Cindy decides not to fight extradition and surrenders to authorities at Scotland Yard. After living 4 years in hiding across Europe, her greatest challenge awaits her back home.
Are you prepared to fight?
I wouldn't be going back to America if I wasn't prepared to fight.
To somehow win custody of her son in court.
I'm gonna fight with everything I've got.
That's next. After 4 years on the run, Cindy Linden has come home to Corpus Christi, Texas, a prisoner. But the very next day, after posting a $50,000 bond, she agrees to a plea bargain with the Department of Justice.
I won't go to trial. I will serve probation, but I have to admit guilty to the charge of kidnapping.
Cindy is allowed to see Gabriel only briefly, to say goodbye. For her ex-husband, Paul Marinkovich, takes him home to Los Angeles.
We're on our way back to California. Right, Gabe?
He now has temporary custody.
There's Mikey. He's grown up a lot, hasn't he?
The next day,
happy birthday to you.
They celebrate his 10th birthday.
We had gifts and birthday presents for every birthday and Christmas that he missed.
Oh my God!
It's gotta be a record.
And he felt as if he had lived here, at least in our hearts, during the time he was missing.
Hey, good morning.
Gabriel's life begins to take shape.
Boing. The old fake sleep.
School.
I got the honor roll.
You're on honor roll. Do you study hard?
Well, my dad helps me study a lot.
That's great, Gabe.
I know.
Vacation trips.
How do you like Disneyland? You have fun?
That's great!
No.
At home, he becomes fast friends with his stepbrother, Ivan.
We became friends from the first day.
Yeah, as soon as he hit me with that pillow, man.
No, you hit me with that pillow.
Is that how you guys became friends, with a pillow fight?
Yep.
Gabriel's realized that there's been a home waiting for him all along. He might not have known what it looked like.
Yeah! Come on, dude!
I did it!
But when he got here, he felt like he was home.
Dad, you're the best! We love you so much!
For the next year, Paul and Cindy fight over visitation, and Cindy sees Gabriel only twice. She tries unsuccessfully to remove the judge from the case, and then prepares for the final chapter, a trial by jury to determine which parent will get permanent custody of Gabriel.
Did each of you saw me swear the testimony you're about to give this call?
Is it possible that this protracted battle between you and your ex-husband has nothing to do with Gabriel, but everything to do with the bitterness between the two of you?
I'm not playing this game for myself or to get at Paul. My whole desire is that my children can love who they want to love and have the freedom to talk about it.
All right, the jury's ready.
Texas is the only state in the country that gives parents the unusual option of determining child custody cases by jury.
Welcome to the 94th District Court.
But before the trial even begins, Cindy is dealt a devastating blow. The judge rules that because an earlier investigation found no merit to Cindy's claims of sexual abuse, witnesses are barred from testifying about the allegations. But Cindy's team never stops trying. Under questioning, her daughter Delancey finds a way to allude to the allegations of abuse.
What advantage would it be for Gabriel to be placed in Cindy's home and remain with you and your family?
Here he would have good love. His father's side. I would give him the bad love.
Do you understand the tremendous responsibility that this jury has?
Let's take a moment.
Gabriel does not take the stand directly.
What is this, Mr. Marinkovich?
But make no mistake.
What you're going to hear is a conversation we had in the car.
His voice is heard. Paul's attorneys introduce an audio tape showing the deep confusion of a child caught in the middle.
Who told you that I'm not your dad?
Because my mommy, she called me Kim's dad.
Well, I think you might be a little bit confused, Gabriel. Because I don't want to lie to you and tell you that I'm not your dad, because I am. And I love you very much. And that's why I'm here.
And Gabriel's court-appointed guardian.
I just want to offer evidence written by Gabriel.
Gives the jury a handwritten note to his parents.
If there was something he could tell everybody here in court, what would he tell them?
I love you guys both, he writes, so it's hard to decide.
That's probably the most profound, if not the most important piece of evidence. That's admitted.
The jury hears evidence for nearly 3 weeks.
I understand we have a verdict. Would you hand that to William, please?
But it takes them less than 3 hours to deliver their verdict.
Question one, answer Paul Marinkovich.
Paul Marinkovich is awarded custody of Gabriel.
I mean, I had asked my lawyer, what's going on? I was in shock.
Thank you very much, folks. You're excused.
My heart's been ripped out of me. It's just this constant, constant pain.
Cindy was granted supervised visits.
How did you feel when you heard that your father won custody?
It was a good feeling because he was coming back and everything was over with, and now he could like do a lot of stuff with me and it won't be so busy. And
do you miss your mom?
Yeah, but I know I'm gonna be seeing her soon because we're working at visitations, and now we're gonna talk on the phone every Thursday at 4 o'clock.
You grew up pretty fast over 4 years.
They went fast.
How do you feel about your mom doing that?
Now when I look at it, it wasn't that fair.
Fair to who?
My dad.
To your dad?
Yeah. Yeah!
I had to fight really hard for my family. And I want the lights to turn off, the cameras to go away.
What?
You could have wiped that instead.
Yeah, I could have wiped that.
And I want to just enjoy my family.
Yeah, I know.
Cindy Graber appealed the case to the Texas Court of Appeals and lost. This ended her custody battle for Gabriel.